What comes to mind when you hear the word data? I know, it's an educational buzzkill, but it doesn't have to be. In this episode, we talk about the power of manipulating instructional data to see things that you cannot see just through grading papers. We're going to talk about the importance of using that data not only to drive your own instruction, but to talk to your colleagues to collaboratively plan together using common data. We talk about ways that you can use data to set up mail merges for parent communication. We're even going to dive into some basic features like conditional formatting and using VLOOKUP to join multiple worksheets. I know it sounds overwhelming, but give it a shot. We are hopeful that today's episode will open your eyes to the power of data. And maybe, just maybe, the word data will no longer send you running out of PD and wishing you would have taken a sick day.
Welcome to The Peg Doesn't Fit, the podcast that brings you the change makers in education. Tune in to hear from educational leaders who aren't content with the status quo educational model and are blazing their own path. All right, everybody, welcome to The Peg Doesn't Fit. I got my wish. I found a genie, and Eric Steven is back on the show. Welcome, Eric. Welcome back.
Thank you, Ryan. I'm glad to be back. Matter of fact, I went ahead and took the liberty of making a post on our Twitter about last week's episode with Ross Parker. If you guys didn't listen to that, make sure you tune into that awesome preview to his new book, Screens That Eat Children. Yes. Links out on Twitter, or you can check it out in our podcast feed.
Yeah, I loved that episode. You probably could have stayed on that one for, I don't know, hours. I'm starting to feel that with every one of our guests, which is pretty awesome. When you feel like you got to cut it short, I think that's a good feeling because you're like, oh, I want to stay. I want to learn more. So that was a good one.
And it's not every day you get to talk to someone in Hong Kong too. So it's very always true. Good to connect with people around the world. So what are we going to talk about today, Ryan? It's my first episode back. It's kind of a segue episode. We don't have a guest. It's just the two of us. We're just kind of catching up, and we're going to talk about some pretty powerful stuff too. But you take the lead. What are we talking about?
Well, we are going to talk about data and all of the uses it has as we transform education and some of just the basic needs, whether you even call it transformative or not. It's just fundamental. So I'm looking forward to getting into that, just chatting through all those things. We've got a few ideas for where we want to go with this, but we are going to keep it freeform. But before we do that, we're going to catch up a little bit since audience has missed Eric, as have I. Let's just talk briefly about what we've both been up to, because I don't think I did anything. I've had changes in my professional life as well, and I never talked about them either. So, Eric, what have you been up to? Where are you at? What are you doing?
Well, I've transitioned into a role working with instructional, and I really liked how you said data, but I'm going to say that I work with instructional data. So I try to work with my teachers and help them use data to drive their instruction. And then I think that's one of the reasons why we're talking about data today, because it's right up my wheelhouse. And it's also something that maybe is underutilized a little bit in instruction. And I don't know, it's been a wild ride. Like when we first connected today on our Zoom call, my head was about to explode because I've been running so many different formulas in Excel and making so many mail merges and getting information out to teachers so they can share with their kids and mass email and parents testing score. I mean, it's been an awesome ride. I've learned a lot about writing formulas, and I've learned a lot about trying to not overgive stuff to my teachers, which I tend to do because I'm kind of a workhorse, but giving them the right stuff and explaining to them what exactly I've given them and how they can use it.
Well, I am personally glad to hear that you are still digging into this stuff. And I think you're a few steps ahead of me with some of this, which has always been the case. And I don't know if we ever told our readers this, but the first time I really got to know Eric through data, as he likes to say, was when I was a sixth grade teacher at a middle school, and he was one of our assistant principals, and he was just, I can talk directly to you. You were digging through Excel data that we had for our students and telling us this and that and that and this, and showing us how to break down, filter, all of that stuff. And I was interested, but at the same time, and this is what we're going to get into, as a teacher, I felt like, why the hell do I even need to know this? It sounds like a great idea, but I kind of don't even know where to start.
Right.
So I don't know if you felt that back then or if you could sense that from us, but what I guess is sad is that though I've come a long ways and I probably outpace anyone on data, except for maybe you when it comes to some of the area admins, maybe. I don't know that our teachers have advanced that much, and that's been 14 years ago now. So,
well, here's what I've noticed, and like you were a little bit tech savvy. I mean, we still have a lot of teachers that are, and we talked about this in our last episode, that, you know, there's kind of two sides of the coin. There's those people that have kind of grown up with technology, which is our kids and maybe some of our younger teachers. And then you have teachers that, you know, basically have developed and progressed throughout life in an old way of thinking, and they kind of pick and choose what they want to take from this new digital age that we're in, but their comfort zone is still kind of, you know, not technology, so to speak, to kind of broaden it out. I mean, you know, I'm on my email all the time. If a teacher emails me and says, hey, I need you in my classroom, you know, if I'm there, I get the email and I go. But we still got teachers that don't check their email, you know, but maybe once or twice a day. So to get teachers like that don't feel real comfortable with technology to take that next leap into changing the way that they analyze the effectiveness of their instruction is just, sometimes that's just too much. But what happens is that once somebody finally sees something that they can find value of, then they tend to go back to something that they can find value of. So my job is to try to help teachers find value in the data to make them want to go use it. I'll give you an example.
Yeah.
So every time we take a test, I spend, and I don't think that it's nearly appreciated enough, but I spend hours, you know, pulling the data from the main site, spitting it out, color coding it, making it look pretty, filtering it by class, filtering it by teacher, filtering all that stuff. And then I email it to them, and then I go to PD and I'm like, all right, everybody pull out the data that I sent you. And it's like, they all go to their email and search my name, right? So what that tells me, and I even told them, because sometimes I lack a filter, I said, you know what this tells me is that every time I send you the data, you look at it out of your own curiosity, but you don't save it anywhere and refer back to it. You know, you've like looked at it, you understand, okay, this is how they did on this certain test, I get it, and then you move on. But do you use that data to make decisions about what you need to teach? So what I did is I had them all make a data folder, yeah, and share it with me and make me an editor. And then I put links up to all these folders under my bookmarks. So now every time there's a report, I just take their data, and instead of emailing it, I drop it in their data folder. So when I do have to meet with them, I can at least say, all right, open up your data folder and everybody can find the data real quick.
That's a cool idea. I like that.
Just helping them get organized, you know, just, I mean, if you look at my OneDrive, it's got like 1,000 folders in it. Right.
Yeah.
Another teacher might just have 1,000 documents on their desktop and they don't know how to find anything. Uh-huh. So just little things like teaching people how to make folders and put like documents in the same folder. I mean, it's all kind of related. So fear of technology and fear of using data are kind of one and the same, because technology is used to generate data.
I sometimes wonder, like, just with that, you know, do you need a whole round of PDs or whatever to just help get teachers up to a certain baseline? And how do you go about that? I don't know. But I was thinking of my wife just last night. She said, she was telling me how she used to use a paper calendar, and just kind of like this last while has said, you know what, I could actually make an Outlook calendar for all the people that sign up for these onboarding sessions. And I could make a separate calendar for every, for all my external meetings or something like that. And just that felt like a game changer for her. But she also had said a good point, which is, I don't want too many tools. Like, I need to see how one tech tool really fits within my scope of meeting and then really dig into it. And so I wonder, like, for your teachers, like you said, maybe it's just start with the shared folder, and then maybe it's do your first filter in Excel. And how do you, I don't know, how do you think you guide teachers to that point? Because everybody is at a different place.
Well, a couple of things about what you said. I think, you know, listening to, and it is encouraging to say wife, because I think last time we were together, I'm not sure if that was the case. I know you
that's true.
So congratulations again, Mr. Bartle. But the fact is that, you know, your wife was accustomed to one thing, and then she found out about another thing, and then realized through finding out about that, about how that could be applicable to her life. So she bought into it. Right. So when we talk about data, we have to convince teachers that it's something that can be applicable to their life to get them to want to buy in. The other thing you asked about PD, you know, do we need to have a lot of PD sessions? Well, I'm sure that all of our listeners can appreciate what I'm about to say. But it seems that in education, we have professional development over a lot of topics. I mean, especially if you're in a middle school, you get professional development all the time. High school people in elementary, maybe they have to strategically put that in. But in middle school, you get it all the time. The problem is,
well, go through your thought, because I have a counterbalance to that based on where I'm at right now.
Well, what I was going to say, the problem is that, you know, you give this PD and you look out to your audience, which would be teachers, and they're all nodding their head and they're all thinking, this is a great idea. Yeah, I could see that. I could see that. But then they go back to their classrooms and they don't do it. So it doesn't matter if we're talking about data, if we're talking about instructional strategy, if we're talking about anything. If you don't leave professional development and put into practice what you just got professional developed on, then, you know, let's say professional development's on a Wednesday. You might think, okay, I'm going to try it Thursday, but you didn't get to it. So you might say, okay, Friday, I'm going to try to put in this new strategy I learned. But if you don't do it soon enough, before you know it, it's next week and you've forgotten what the professional development was about. And it's like it never even existed.
Yeah.
Right. So we do professional development in a sense that is so wide that we need to focus in and we need to do a professional development on this strategy, whatever it is, if it's a strategy or if it's data, if it's parent communication, whatever it is, do it on Tuesday and then do it on Wednesday. And then maybe next week have teachers bring back some practice that they've tried. I mean, something that keeps it on the forefront, but at least in my experience, we tend to do a topic and then another topic and then another topic and another topic. And it's like, we get so system overloaded with information that it doesn't always get put into practice because it's hard for teachers to find an applicable use of it if they never really have the time to put it into play.
Right, there's no practice time.
So that was like my little spiel on PD there.
Well, I like that. I remember feeling that as a teacher in the district that you are in right now, that it was like, oh my gosh, what are we going to be surprised with today? What's the new topic that we will have shoved on us and not have time to learn about? Or what's the topic that we're going to get that I already know plenty about, so I just have to sit and endure it?
Right.
Which is another challenge in and of itself. I'm now at a district that is, so outside of where you're at, I think in smaller districts, what's fairly common is what I'm experienced, which is, we only have PD 8 times a year. And it does not exist during the school day or the school week, but we do have set days to do district and building wide PD about 8 times a year, but that's it. So in that way, I feel like my frequency has dropped. And so how do you kind of, maybe with both of these things, it's two different sides of the same coin, which is, how do you drive learning and practice opportunities that exist outside of the PD classroom, so to speak, so that teachers can engage in something they're interested in and practice that. Because for me, it's like I've got two coming up in February. We have two different days, but I'm like, okay, how do I make it count? How do I not overwhelm them with some kind of backlog of all the things that we got to learn, and still make that valuable for them?
Well, that's the million-dollar question. But I tell you what we're starting to spin away on here is perhaps a topic for a new show, in terms of maybe we need a professional development show down the road. But this one's going to be about data. And I know we got limited time. We want to make sure we maximize listenership. Right. So let's focus on data. And one of the things, we had a Chad Dumas on, one of the last times I was on, you know, a couple of years back, talking about putting the C back in PLC. And I know PLC is a popular term in education, maybe one that causes disgust in teachers because they don't like PLC, they don't like the way it works. But I kind of want to talk about that professional learning community and how data can be of benefit in that system. Because here's the deal. If you're going to put a bunch of teachers together to meet on a regular basis, maybe once a week, maybe twice a week, I don't know, maybe in your case, 8 times a year, you got to have something to drive that conversation. You know what I'm saying? And that's where I am finding the absolute power, especially with my math and reading teachers, because we are currently utilizing, we're not quite to the level where we're creating our own common assessments, but we are utilizing the state practice assessments.
Yeah.
In Kansas, we have a software, all of our state assessments are online, but within that software, there's about 20 different little mini practice tests that are designed to prepare students for the state assessment. And we're kind of using those to drive our instruction. They're like 6 to 10 questions. We take one every week during our intervention time, and we just alternate math and reading. So essentially all the seventh grade math teachers, well, all the grade level math teachers are gonna, but I'm gonna use seventh grade as an example, are gonna give the same assessment. And then we're going to, and since it's taken on the computer, we have the ability to export those results into Excel. And that's where the true power comes in with the data, is being able to take it in Excel and manipulate it the way that that helps important information stand out to you. And then the teachers during their planning time can take that information and determine, what do we need to reteach in the next 2 weeks to help us prepare for our next assessment? And then the process starts all over again. And it's really been powerful to kind of watch my teachers slowly accept this new art of teaching, or this new way of analyzing learning. We're, you know, we still got a lot of ways to go, but it's been pretty powerful the way that I can give them the information. I need to keep creating opportunities for them to have their aha moments. So then it starts becoming a way of their life and not just, all right, open up your data folders and let's look at the data.
Makes sense. How do you feel, like, is there a gap in understanding that you have to bridge as well? Like, what does my data mean? And you have to do that a little bit, or is it?
Well, the thing that's I think pivotal in our district is that we have these positions like me, that a person at every building that leads data discussions, right? If it was all left on the teachers to do on their own, only your super techie high flyers would do it. So let's talk about some ways that we can do it outside of what I'm using, that state assessment software. I mean, just in terms of, if two teachers get together, they look at their standards and they say, all right, these are the standards we're focusing on for the next 2 weeks, and creating an assessment in Google Forms or Microsoft Forms or whatever it is that you want to create that assessment in, and creating it to where they can have it electronic. I got in a conversation with a special ed teacher earlier in the year, right? Because we have special ed students that take away around behavior sheets, and it's part of the process. You have to collect that data, right? So I asked her, I was like, well, what do you do with the data? Well, I put it in a folder. So she has essentially, and you can't see my video because it's not working, but she's got this big folder with like 50 sheets of daily behavior tracking for that kid, right? Mm-hmm. So she's got a lot of data, but she has no way to look at it.
Yeah.
So I created an Excel spreadsheet for her where she can simply put in, it's got the behaviors, you can simply put in the 1, 2, and 3, right? On each day, whatever it is they score per hour. And then it's got pre-built sheets that allow her to analyze. So if I'm tracking behavior A, well, is behavior A more of a problem in the morning, in the afternoon? Is it more of a problem in social studies? Is it more of a problem in science? Matt, you know what I'm saying? She can break all that data down and present it visually to have a meaningful conversation in an IEP meeting with data charts, rather than just pulling out this folder of stack of papers and say, well, it looks like you did good on this day.
Right.
This day was kind of bad, but you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So that's one way of looking at data, kind of like classroom assignments. Yeah, you can have all the kids turn in the assignments, but do you truly understand what the kids are learning and what they're not learning as a whole when you're looking at every individual assignment in individual parts?
What you hit on too is I think a key way to help teachers connect and value it is that data can tell a story. But when it's stuck in a folder or if it's just on a giant spreadsheet, the next crucial step is to put it to use and put it in a graph or put it in a certain visual, whatever that particular chart looks like. That's where the power comes in. And like you said, we could look at whether this happens most often in the afternoon or the morning or in science or when, and then it starts to have some punch to it because then it's more than just numbers. And I think you have hit on an essential connection point for teachers for just how to use it. And then maybe they can even start to ask those questions for, hey, I don't know how to do this, Eric, but what I want to find out is, and then becoming their own little researchers in a sense, like I want to find out if my kids that I have in the afternoon do better at, I don't know, analyzing main idea than my kids in the morning. And maybe it has nothing to do with the time of day, but they could start with that idea and then they could even just be like, wait a minute, are the girls better at this or the boys better at this? Or whatever path they want to take that. And then that gives them some purpose with which to deal or sort through that.
Yeah. And all of that stuff. And I'll tell you what, I'm going to put this offer out to our listeners. I mean, if you want to, you can hit me up on Twitter at The Peg Doesn't Fit, or you can go to my personal Twitter at Eric J. Steven. If you want to send me an email, and I would have no problem meeting with anybody over Zoom to kind of show them how to write some simple formulas. I mean, conditional formatting is just a no brainer. If you have, say, a question and you want to figure out, out of all my questions, which scores did students get 50% or lower on, you can write a conditional formatting formula in a matter of seconds that'll highlight every student under 50% in whatever color you want.
Right.
And sometimes, you know, when you just look at, teachers are kind of like the kids. Like if you give an assignment to a kid that's like 10 page long packet, like that's overwhelming and might be too much for them. And they might just not even do it. Same thing. If you look at a spreadsheet full of numbers, it looks like German, you know, no offense to our German speakers. But what I'm saying is that if you can just highlight what you want to see in the right color, it's just a matter of highlight, click, and tell it this, and it does it for you automatically. There's a lot of really cool things that you can do with Excel to understand your data or your results to your tests or your behavior plans or whatever it is that you're doing. It's just I don't know. I find it powerful, but I'm pretty techie. But I will tell you this, when I started, I didn't really know anything.
Yeah.
You know, once you find out, it's like you said, once there's something comes up that you're curious about, well, you just hit the Google and say, how do you do this? And it tells you.
Mm-hmm. Like I want to have you teach me how to do VLOOKUP, because I think that might be a critical piece in helping me do some data storytelling that I want to do.
Well, and I didn't mention VLOOKUP to our listeners, but VLOOKUP is an awesome formula where if you've got one spreadsheet and inside the spreadsheet, you have multiple worksheets at the bottom, and each worksheet at the bottom has information, different testing scores or whatnot. As long as every sheet has a common factor, like a student number or the name is spelled exactly the same, you can join all those into one. So that's a formula that I learned this year in this new job that has been pretty powerful. And I know that some of this sounds boring to our listeners, but I'm telling you, you know, if you gave it a shot and looked at information in a way on a spreadsheet, it just pops out to you. It's night and day versus looking at it on a piece of paper.
Well, for sure. I think one of the ones that I think is like the most fun, because it's just instantly visual, is the conditional formatting that you mentioned earlier. That even if you just had if you just want to, I don't know, drop in a whole grade book or a series of scores and just have it highlight it all and press conditional formatting, and it'll automatically even give you an option. Like it'll shade them. I think in Google Sheets, what it does is it shades them dark green to light green,
yep,
based on highest to lowest score.
Yep.
But you can set those color rules however you want, but it is fairly automated, and instantly, without having to read every number, you can see just by what color is the darkest, lightest, where your kids scored within that particular subject.
Yep. And I'm glad you brought that up about grade books. I mean, most districts have electronic grade books for their staff. And yep. And sometimes what I do is I take my teacher grade books and I spit them out in Excel, and then I turn them into pivot tables. And yep. Sometimes it's a lot easier to kind of see the grade book as a whole in a spreadsheet form than looking at it in the gradebook form. For instance, we do standards reference grading here in our district. And what it does is when I spit it out in a pivot table, I can put like one field, I can put all the assignments underneath certain standards, and then you can get averages in that. And a lot of gradebooks do that too. But again, you know, sometimes gradebooks aren't always fluid and easy to click around, so you can't really see it in one picture. But in Excel, if you start to understand the filters and whatnot, you can just click the filter and see exactly what you want. But it's pretty cool because, like, let's say I'm not going to give the actual standard, but let's just say standard one, right? If you have the pivot table set up and your assignments are all tied to a standard, well, then you can drop it and figure out in a matter of seconds how many assignments do you have for each standard. You can have the overall average of the standard, and then you can have the overall averages of each assignment underneath the standard. And then it's just a quick way of looking, saying, oh, wow, looks like they're doing pretty good on the standard, but they didn't do very good on that assignment. Is there something that I need to do differently? Do I need to go reteach that assignment, or maybe I just need to scratch it and not teach it again because it wasn't effective?
Exactly. So it provides those quick opportunities to see where you need to reteach. I also experienced when we taught it, when at the second building where I taught and you were the assistant principal, I started to explore how does it gamify learning. And I started to use those scores or those standards to say which class is scoring the highest or which class is improving the most based on their scores. And I would put up graphs on the like Bellwork slideshows that I had, and kids would be like, oh, I got my assignment turned in. Can you see if our score is better for our class? And they got so excited in this kind of race to the top versus my other classes. And that created a lot of fun too. And that's where, once you get into some of these advanced levels of playing around, I think it gets totally worth it, because then it can start to get not only just valuable and meaningful, but it can create value through the fun that it can create with your classes and your students.
Yeah. And most grade books, you know, they're, I mean, every student, a lot of students know their student numbers. You can post your grade book essentially by student number, and the kids can see exactly where they fall according to the other kids. You can, like you said, you can compare class to class, but you can post that stuff for public knowledge, and kids can just go up and kind of see where they fall within their peers. You know,
is
it's
that
funny.
The rule? I've always wondered that. Where I never knew how much can I share, but if I put a student number that's somewhat anonymous, but the kid knows, is that my trick to get around the whole FERPA thing?
Well, yeah, because unless the student tells everybody their student number, nobody's going to know who they are, right?
Yeah.
So
that's what I might start doing. We have a few public display boards, and I thought about doing that for other things that are more like grade with the most tardies or students with the least tardies or stuff like that, and just celebrate some of those other elements that data can provide.
Absolutely. And what you're talking about, it's funny because I got a couple different teachers that are using data boards, and I got one that's kind of trying to make the transition, and I got another that's a little techie. So the one that's trying to make the transition has made these huge posters, and he's got the student numbers all down, but then he like handwrites in their scores, you know, which is very time intensive. He has to do that for every assignment and every test they take. He handwrites in the score versus another one that's got it on Excel spreadsheets. They can just spit it out on Excel and list it by student number, and it just takes them a click and print, and it's done. So, but either way, both are exciting to me because both teachers are making an attempt to use data. It's just one is far more less time intensive than the other. And I'm hopeful, and this is back to the power of collaboration in our PLCs, is that this teacher that handwrites everything will see another teacher explaining how they do it digitally, and he'll be like, my God, why have I been wasting my time? It's like weed eat. It's like edging your yard, right? It's like you can edge your yard by turning your weed eater sideways, and it takes a little bit longer and you might not do as well. And then one day you go to Lowe's and you're like, what? They make edgers? And you can buy an edger, and it's actually a machine that does it for you. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So it's pretty cool. Another thing I wanted to hit on real quick is, you know, we've talked about this in the past as collective efficacy and trying to build leadership capacity within a building. If you have a building, or if you know teachers that are really good at something, give them the opportunity to teach other teachers what they're doing. Because one thing I've noticed, and I know that our listeners can appreciate this, is that when you're getting professional development from a colleague that does the same job that you do day in and day out versus from an administrator that's been out of the classroom for 20 years, is in a little disconnected with how the world really works, you might be more willing to listen to your colleague because they're getting good results with the same population that you teach. It's right. Kind of like, I know that every teacher has watched these, they've got their district has put in some awesome innovation that they've spent millions of dollars on. And you sit there at PD and you watch videos of these teachers doing this program. And you look at all the kids in the class sitting there perfectly asking questions. Nobody's talking, nobody's off task. And you're thinking, those aren't my kids, right? You're not going to listen to the people on that video but you're going to listen to the person that teaches next door to you. Mm-hmm. And if they're teaching the same kids you are, and their kids are on task and productive, and your kids are disruptive and loud and talking, you might want to figure out, is there something I can do differently that this teacher's doing that maybe my kids will start acting more like their kids?
Right.
So, just a thought.
Well, that collective efficacy, that's a big one when it comes to Hattie.
It is. And, you know, I've got a really good math teacher, and I emailed the district math person, said, hey, man, this guy is dynamite. And I know that he'd like to get into some coaching or some data positions, you know, and I just kind of want to help him network. And next thing I know, that guy emailed that teacher. And now my teacher that I think is excellent is going to be leading a district end service over using data in the classroom. And I'm super excited for him. And
oh, that's cool.
And that's just, right there, now he has this leadership capacity within him that he's not only going to be sharing stuff with his colleagues at his school, but he gets to reach out and talk to people at other schools in the same district. And I'm really excited for him.
That is awesome.
One other quick thing, because I know we're running out of time, but I want to bring up this. One thing that I've done with the data, and again, if anybody wants to know how to do this, feel free to email me or text me or whatever, but I've been sending home mass emails to every parent in our building with our students' testing results every time they take a test. And the way that I can do that is I have a spreadsheet that I joined. I downloaded all the email addresses from our database, and I joined all those email addresses next to our data. And then I went into Word or Publisher or something and typed a draft email and put all the fields that I want to do. And I merged all that stuff in and I emailed it all to parents. And now parents are emailing me all the time asking me, what can I do? Can I get some tutoring? And then I'm hooking them up with resources on getting extra help for their kids. And this is something that in the past, these parents had no idea how these kids were doing. But now that I am emailing them every single test result they have, when we take these common assessments, the parent teacher building communication is off the charts. And again, that's something that you can do with Excel and Microsoft Word. Just make a mail merge and send it out. But one thing I tell all the teachers, you guys are inundated with data. You have so much data you don't know what to do with. And the bottom line is if that's how you feel, then we are wasting our time doing what we're doing. Because if we're not using the information that we're getting from the things that we do, then what's the point of collecting the data if we're not going to use them? It's a big waste of time. And I'm trying to get teachers to overlook that and understand the power of the data so they want more data and not less.
Well said. I think they all, once they recognize that they have it and how to use it, I think all teachers want to do something well. And when they can make that connection, I think it's worth the effort.
Well, they're not used to getting blown up in their emails from parents emailing them. If I send home the results of a math test and all of a sudden all the parents are emailing the math teachers and saying, hey, what can I do to help? They're like, what is this? I'm not used to parents reaching out to me and asking me how they can help. But that's the thing. Our parents want to help. We just need to make sure and we keep them in the know.
Yep.
So Definitely. Anyway, listen, I'm a data nerd. I thought this was a good episode. Again, I'm going to extend that invitation. If anybody wants to connect for a little workshop, I'm all free. You know, I'm all about collaborating.
Right. We want to spread the love.
Any closing thoughts, Ryan?
Boy, I kind of have interspersed them throughout, but just I think it's powerful to just pick something. If you're a teacher, pick something and just try it. But I'd say start with the conditional formatting in Google Sheets or Excel, and you can make up your own. Like, type in 15 different, shirt sizes for your baseball team and have it rank them from different, like, XL to small, and it'll do it. Like, it can do so much stuff. Just make something colorful and fun and see what you can do. Just try something out.
Well said, Ryan.
As always, thank you for checking us out at The Peg Doesn't Fit. We appreciate you listening. You can find us on Twitter at The Peg Doesn't Fit. You can find me at Ryan D. Bartle 1.
And my personal Twitter is at Eric J. Steven. You can also email us at thepegdoesn'tfit@gmail.com or leave us a voicemail at anchor.fm/thepegdoesn'tfit.
Drop us a 5-star review on iTunes. Tell your educator friends or family, anybody. We'd love to hear from you.
All right. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you next week on The Peg Doesn't Fit.